Well, thank you for, our interpreters, okay? Thank you for coming along to what looks like my last of many press conferences with you, though, of course, I shall be appearing and giving a speech to the Parliament of BIH 9 o'clock on Monday morning, bringing to a full circle my mandate, which, if you recall, on its first day started with a speech to Parliament and will end on the last full day of my mandate. Well, good afternoon to you all. I've called this special press conference, in order to announce the next steps in the process of handing over responsibilities from the international community to the BIH authorities. Beginning of my mandate, you may recall that I set out one overarching objective: to put this country irreversibly onto the path to effective statehood and onto the road that leads to Europe and to NATO. I said that as Bosnia and Herzegovina moves away from the post-Dayton era towards the era of Brussels, it's only right that the international community and the international engagement in this country should reflect that new reality, that shift of power, and that the powers currently wielded by my office are gradually handed back to the BIH authorities. I've long said that the start of the stabilisation and association process should trigger that process, and indeed we had the first highly successful negotiation session of the SAA process only the day before yesterday. But that process, the process of handover of power, is already underway and will, I have absolutely no doubt, be continued by my successor, with whom I have, of course, discussed this in detail. In March last year, I started to review the cases of those individuals who have been removed by the High Representative. Since then, I have lifted bans on 30 individuals. Last year, the lifting of bans on removed officials, please note, far outnumbered by a factor of 10 the removal decisions that I had to take. We lifted the bans on 30 individuals and we removed 3. These numbers give a very clear indication of how much the situation has changed. Several months later, I reduced the scope of the High Representative's removal by allowing removed officials, with the exception only of those who were removed for ICTY obstruction, to apply for and to hold non-managerial positions subject to selection through open competition within public bodies. 6 weeks ago, I took a further step when I sent to the BIH Parliament a package of draft amendments to state legislation that would, when passed, place the vetting process of ministerial candidates, currently carried out, of course, by OHR, into the hands of the BIH's authorities after the election of October 2006. So these are the steps we have taken so far in this process of transfer, which will be ongoing as we move towards the day when the High Representative's office closes and this becomes a European Union Special Representative's office. It's now time to take further steps in this direction, and this is what I'm here to announce. Firstly, earlier this morning, I signed a decision to amend the BIH election law. The passage in the BIH election law, Article 20.9A, is the one that I've amended. This amendment will have the effect of greatly reducing the number of individuals currently barred from standing in elections and from holding elected office. Let me explain. The BIH election law, as it's currently drafted, imposed incidentally by one of my predecessors in different times, stipulates that individuals who were removed by the Provisional Election Commission or the Election Appeals Subcommission, which was one of its component parts, or by the High Representative, or by the Commander of S4, or by the IPTF Commissioner, for having obstructed the implementation of Dayton, all of these people could not be a candidate in elections or to hold elected office. However, times have changed. I'm sure that was the right decision for one of my predecessors to take, but it seems to me wrong that this blanket removal from the electoral process of people who, in some cases, have made minor infringements should not be allowed to continue. In many cases, the circumstances for banning the individuals in the first place have changed and no longer apply. A large number of sanctions, and particularly those applied by the Provisional Election Commission and the Election Appeal Subcommission, apply to individuals who were involved in illegal occupancy cases, to give you an example, that have long since been resolved. I've therefore decided to lift the ban from all individuals who were removed by the Provisional Election Commission or the Election Appeals Subcommission. Now, this applies to roughly some 160 or so individuals who will, from today, be able to stand for election and to hold elected office, people who would not otherwise have been able to stand in the next election. In addition, I've decided to limit the duration of the bans that remain in force to the end of December 2007. So by the end of December 2007, all of these bans will be lifted. Secondly, I've also decided, as part of the process that I launched in March 2005, the so-called Phoenix process, to lift the ban on a further four individuals who were removed by the High Representative in 1999 and 2000. The individuals concerned are Miladin Pesic, Sanya Sırna, Sevilla Brankovic, Hayruddin Husic, and you can get their names and details in a separate handout at the back of the room at the end of the press conference. They were, incidentally, all removed for obstructing refugee and property return. So it's a further step forward down that process, and again, I anticipate that this process will continue. Finally, let me go back to the subject of ministerial vetting, which I covered extensively at a press conference a few weeks ago. As the bans on people from participating in political life are being lifted, many, no doubt, will ask, what prevents corrupt and compromised officials from taking office? Well, the answer at present is OHR. We have all witnessed examples of how political power is abused in BIH. We all know that too often politicians view their positions as a function of control, or, let's be blunt about it, an opportunity to steal the taxpayers' money, rather than as a chance to advance the interests of the country and of its citizens. The only way to prevent this from happening, except OHR should do it, and my view that OHR should not continue to do this beyond the 2006 elections, the only other way from prevent this from happening is to set up a domestic procedure which will have the effect of vetting ministerial candidates. And that's why we have proposed that the government and parliament should adopt an open and transparent system of vetting of ministerial candidates. You may recall that the package of draft amendments that I presented 6 weeks ago is designed to introduce exactly such a system, to set up in BIH a system which broadly mirrors that, for instance, in the United States for vetting public officials holding executive positions. The essence of what we proposed is simple, that nominees to high ministerial office should be screened for potential issues that would make their public service problematic, and that the full spectrum of the elected legislature would be able to subject them to scrutiny prior to a vote of the full House, visible to the public at large. And you may recall that I said to you that this was a process in which I hoped the press in BIH would play an active and important role. It's an open system. It's a transparent system. It will mean that the process of vetting through the OHR can end, and the process of vetting through the powerful instruments of the civic society, not least the press, as well as parliamentarians, can begin. Let me say to you delicately that I can sense a certain reluctance amongst those who are in power in Bosnia and Herzegovina to pass this legislation on to Parliament. I hope that they will do so. I believe that the package of laws that I proposed should be forwarded to the House of Representatives as soon as possible, undiluted in their essence. This is an essential and important part of the process of BIH establishing its credentials as a fully operating modern democracy consistent to European standards. Perhaps I understand how some take the view that this is a dangerous thing to do because they might lose control to Parliament. But it is important that we boost the power of Parliament and give it this role in the future. And it is, in my view, inappropriate that OHR should continue to vet these people after the next elections, when the people who are vetted by the people of by the voters of BIH should themselves be in full possession of the powers that the voters have given them, rather than having this vetted by the international community. So I hope this law will be passed from the Council of Ministers to Parliament for consideration. It's imperative, it seems to me, that a discussion on the merits of the law begins now, in order that this new process of domestic vetting, you might call it, should be adopted in time for the October elections. As times change, we have to change with them, and that counts for both the international community and for the domestic institutions in Bosnia and Herzegovina. This country now has an opportunity to take its destiny in its own hands, and this means that across the board, including on those issues, BIH's politicians must show that they are committed to and capable of delivering reforms, and BIH's citizens, civil society, and you, the media, can hold them, have a framework in which to hold them to account for doing this. I have every confidence that you and they will succeed. I'm happy to take questions on what my announcements today first, and then on any other questions you may wish to ask me. Does anybody want to ask any questions on the announcements we've made? Neema? No one? Any other questions? Yeah.
Zgodi Čansar, Neema Namo.
Htio
bih, eto, prije nego što u ovom vašem opuštanju presici, da mi samo objasnite zašto ste zapravo stavili zabranu da se domaći sudovi bave slučajima decertificiranih policajaca. To je jedno pitanje, a drugo pitanje se tiče jedne grupe koja se veže iza vaše ime, između ostalog, mislim da se zove Hakl grupa, pa možete nam objasniti šta ona radi zapravo.
I did not impose any ban on the domestic courts. The highest court in the world, highest law in the world, is the law of the UN Security Council. As I've explained many times, and I've explained many times in press conferences, the mandate of the IPTF that deregistered the police officers is a mandate completely separated from the High Representative. And I'm glad to say the decertified police officers, when they came to see me, understood that. They understood that there was no action I could take on this matter. I fully support, let me say again, their claim to have a review of their cases. But I am powerless to institute that because this mandate is the mandate of the UN Security Council, not my mandate. Now, the UN Security Council's resolutions are superior to all other courts in the world. They are the dominant lawmaking body in the world. The mandate under which this was done came from the UN Security Council. A British court could not pass legally a decision which was against a UN Security Council mandate or resolution. So this has nothing to do with the High Representative banning the courts. It's simply informing the courts and the BIH institutions that according to the structure of world law, they are not allowed to pass decisions which are contrary to the decisions taken on a UN Security Council mandate, as in this case, or a UN Security Council resolution. It's merely a fact of law. It's not my job to interfere in the courts, and I don't interfere in the courts. On the second issue, I did have this extraordinary story on the front page of SAN drawn to my attention this morning. Let me say to you that there is not a single shred, scintilla, of atom of truth in it. Not a single one. Now, I understand that in this country, and in my country too, it's possible for newspapers to publish stories which have no connection whatsoever with the truth. I accept that. Happens in all countries. But I'm glad you give me the opportunity to say that in this story, which I read with amazement today, There is not a single atom of truth between the organization you describe, if indeed it exists, and Paddy Ashland, or I'm pretty certain I can say Wolfgang Petritsch or Carl Bildt. So you must have had fun publishing it, but it has no connection with the truth whatsoever. Is that clear enough? Dobro. Next question.
Almedin Šišć, nezavisni novine. Gospodine Ždaun, u maju 2002. godine, kada ste dolazili ovdje, najavili ste da će vaš ključni paket reformi biti kroz provođenje posla i pravde, odnosno najavili ste da će posao i pravda biti dva ključna faktora na koji ćete se vi koji ćete željeti da provedete zajedno sa BiH vlastima. Ako uzmem u obzir činjenicu da danas u Bosni i Hercegovini pravde ima nešto više nego prije, činjenica je da posla nema nikako, da je katastrofalno stanje. Osjećate li se odgovornim za to? Jel barem djelomično odgovornim?
Did you say you're from Nezavisni novine?
Da, yes.
I think you published my answer to that question in today's newspaper. Because I was asked that question in a very full interview that I gave to Nezavisni novine. Let me tell you again. I made it clear from the start, you can't invent jobs overnight. Now let me remind you, and I can remember using this figure with you when I first launched the Justice and Jobs Agenda. It took Hungary 7 years from the moment it started economic reform to the moment that was delivering jobs in a modern economy. I said when we started this that we had to do the economic reform now in order to create the jobs later. But precisely because we have done all those reforms, including the bulldozer reforms, stripping away the barriers to business, including, of course, VAT, including the steps that we have taken to create a single economic space in Bosnia and Herzegovina, not completed, and I believe that we must continue to make economic reform a priority. If we'd have started in year one of the Dayton process, we'd be further advanced than we are now. But we only made economic reform a priority in year seven when I came here. I hope and believe my successor will continue to push that. But these are having an effect. Let me give you the figures, in case you don't know them. The economy of Bosnia and Herzegovina, despite massive withdrawal of international aid over the last 2 years, 3 years, and contrary to predictions from economists that this economy would completely collapse once the international aid was withdrawn, has done nothing of the sort. It's now growing at 5.6%. By the way, the fastest growing economy in the Western Balkans. We have the lowest inflation in the Western Balkans. We have foreign direct investment up 25% in this country in the last year. We have exports up 25% in the last year. We have industrial production in the Federation up 23.6% in the last year, and in Republika Srpska up around 12% in the last year. Now, is this good enough? No. It'll take time before this has an effect on the lives of ordinary citizens in Bosnia and Herzegovina. But if we hadn't started then, this economy would be in collapse. And I'm very clear that the reforms that we've taken have laid the groundwork for job creation. Jobs are being created at present, but at too small a level. But that will come later. By the way, 5.6% growth from a very low base, let's accept, is not good enough. We need a growth rate of 7% to make that sustainable. But what is very clear has happened as a result of those reforms, the jobs and justice, or the jobs reform agenda, is that contrary to total collapse, which is what everybody predicted when international aid was withdrawn, the BIH economy is now beginning to come out of the bottom of the post-war reconstruction period, is beginning to grow again, and is growing, let me remind you, faster than Serbia, Montenegro, and faster than any other country in the Western Balkans. And that's the product of the jobs agenda.
Dragomir Simović, agencija SNN. Možete li, rekli ste malo prije da neki funkcioneri nevoljko prihvataju da se proces provjere prebaci na parlament, pa možete li malo biti precizniji, odrediti, jesu to otprilike iz izvršnih vlasti ili koji su to krugovi, tako da kažemo. A drugo pitanje je, šta mislite ko je bio uspješniji, barem za vrijeme koje ste vi ovdje, vi ili domaće vlasti?
I think. Will I be more specific? No. I'm sure you can read the messages, you're very good at doing that. This is legislation that's been put into the Council of Ministers. I hope they'll consider it and pass it on to the Parliament as quickly as possible. Who is more the process of driving this thing forward? I think you're a better judge of that than me. As I see it, this has been a partnership. Let me be very clear to you. None of the major reforms that have been done in the last 4 years, most people thought they were impossible, by the way, none of those major reforms, unification of the armed forces, unification of OSSA, unification of the customs service, VAT, judicial reform, not one of those has been done by high representatives in position. All of them have been done through parliaments. And they're tough. They're very difficult reforms. If I may say so, especially for Republika Srpska. It has, in my view, required a very high level of political leadership for people to accept some of those reforms, given this country's history and given its current structures. Now, have I been pushing from behind? Of course I have. But that happens in many countries. Now, I can remember going to see an Italian prime minister once who said to me very bluntly, look, I'm delighted with the euro because it forces me to do economic reforms I would never otherwise do. Now, that's a fact of life in all countries. And yes, the international community has been pushing that along. But I don't think you can see the steps forward made in the last 4 years. It's simplistic and wrong, in my view, to see them as steps made by the high representatives who has worked the levers for everybody to respond to. It has been a partnership. A very tough one at times. But it has been a partnership. And I pay tribute to those who have done these things. And it's important that we should recognize that. Yeah, we'll make it the last one, shall we? Okay, all right, last two then.
Mr. Ezdan, in your future work, are you going to stay in touch with Bosnian issues in some way, like Volkan Petrić did in that association,
yeah,
Bosnia 2005?
Well, look, there's a rule I operate from. And I'm going to frustrate some of you when you ring me up and want comments after I've left here. When you leave the stage, leave the stage. I don't believe it's right that a high representative should, interfere in the work of his successor. I am very happy, extremely confident. I'm a very satisfied man that the international community has selected my successor, Schwarz Schilling. I think he's a remarkable man. I think he knows this country well. He has a high level of trust in this country. He will be completely different from me, and that's right too. We need a different style for the next phase. So I will leave him the space to make his own decisions. And if he wants me to comment and help, I'm there to do so. But yes, I've grown very attached to this country. And I've been very attached to the region. So yeah, I will be arguing the case using my public space in Britain and in Europe that Europe needs to move the Balkans faster towards Europe, that we should accelerate the process. And yes, I hope I'll be able to act as a heavyweight following lines, because I think there's some comment in the press about this today as well, unpaid in any way, salesman for Bosnia and Herzegovina. If there's things I can do to sell Bosnia as a tourist destination, let me underline the word again, because I have to, unpaid. If there's anything I can do to argue the case for Bosnia and Herzegovina being accepted into Europe, and if that's helpful to people, that I should do it, and if my successor agrees, yeah, of course I will. Wolfgang Petrić chose his way of doing this, but I'll choose mine. All of the high representatives here, I think, have grown very attached to Bosnia and Herzegovina and see it part of their continuing job to sell the advantage of this country and to make sure that it moves forward to its proper destination as part of the European Union. If I can help in that process in some unofficial way, I'll do so. But two things I won't do. One is, this is not a paid job. I'll do it because I believe it's right to do it. And secondly, I will try not to interfere, and I hope I'll succeed, in the space which is occupied by my successor. Yeah.
Mandić, Dnevni list. Kako komentarišete činjenicu da na kraju vašeg mandata imamo situaciju da je jedna vlada pala, ostale dvije klimaju se, u krizi su već više od godinu dana i vijeće ministara i federalna vlada, i da proces reformi, kako reče monitoring tim, prije neki dan jako slabo napreduje, nisu ispunjene obaveze Vijeća Europe, nije obrazovanje sređeno, izborni zakon nije do kraja završen, javni RTV sistem nije do kraja završen, reforma policije na dugim vodama i tako dalje i tako dalje. Jedno pitanje, drugo pitanje, da li ćete ostati u privatnim vezama sa Bosnom i Hercegovinom, odnosno da li ćete zadržati kuću na Jablaničkom jezeru ili ste je uspjeli prodati?
Sorry, the falling government's implementation and my own personal thing. Right. I mean, I've watched with interest what's happening in Republika Srpska. You know, it seems to come around every year, really. You have the Western Christmas, we have a Christmas tree. The Orthodox Christmas, you have an oak branch. And in the Republika Srpska, you have a crisis. It all seems to occur at the same time. Only this time, I'm glad to say, it's nothing to do with the High Representative. Look, I don't decide if governments stand or fall. These are domestic matters. I take no part in making them happen, and I take no part in resolving them when they do happen. When we had a crisis in the Republika Srpska last year, I said it was none of my business. It's up to the domestic authorities. So I don't think that there's any connection between that and the end of my mandate. Secondly, on the question of implementation, look, I'm the first to say, and I said right from the start, that all we could do was to create the broad outline structures of a modern devolved state. And that's what we've done. We now have to make the institutions we have created in the last year work. And that's going to be one of the job of my successors. We have to make sure that SEPA is fully functional, that the VAT works effectively, that the police reform is put into practice. Implementation is the next phase. But in this case of 4 years, in the space only of 4 years, to have created a single unified structure for the armed forces, a single customs service, a single VAT system, most people thought we couldn't do that, a single intelligence service, to have laid the unification of Mostar, to have created a single judiciary, a single code of law, which is capable of carrying of catching criminals, to have created a state court for corruption, which is now capable of trying the highest in the land, to have created a war crimes chamber, capable of doing that most difficult thing, trying in Bosnia and Herzegovina those who have committed crimes against humanity in Bosnia and Herzegovina. You know, that's not a small agenda for 4 years' work. And by the way, 4 years ago, especially when the elections produced the results they did, most people said this could never be done. I'll tell you my analysis. I've done it to one or two individual newspapers, but I'll tell you it again. When I came here, I looked at Bosnia and Herzegovina. I knew you had to get to Europe. I knew it was the only future you could have, and I knew that the gates to Europe were closing. And I also knew that the international interest in this country was diminishing, the international resources coming into this country, the aid would go down, and the number of international soldiers would be reduced. They've been halved. We had to move fast. Yeah, okay, I admit, it's been a bit brutal. It had to be. There was no other way that we could get this country through the gates of Europe before they closed. There's no other way that we could have avoided the Bosnia and Herzegovina being left behind as the black hole of Europe. So let me tell you, I make no apologies for that. I make no apologies for that. It had to be done. So I think it's a big agenda to have covered in 4 years. Making this state functional and making the institutions we have created functional, that's the next task. That's the task for my successor. Okay, anything else? Okay, one more then. Oh, I see two hands. Let's keep it short. I'll try and keep my answers short as well.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, my house. Yeah, my lawyer informs me that the house is sold. As you know, I put this on the open market. It's been done in an open, transparent way. It's been handled by the lawyer, and he has informed me that the procedures are complete. And I think the story published in Express last week reflects the accurate story. Yeah.
Again.
By the way, it remains my ambition to purchase a place up in the mountains in Bosnia and Herzegovina. I want to keep an investment in this place because I want to keep coming back here. My family asked me to, as you know, sell the Jablanica property, forgive me, because they wanted to have somewhere in the mountains where we could walk in the summer and ski in the winter. It remains my ambition to do that, but since I am personally involved in the Bjelašnica Igman project, it would frankly be wrong of me to go ahead straight away and do that. It would produce a conflict of interest that would be unhelpful. So I have to wait for a little time to relapse before I'll make a purchase. That's my ambition. Yeah.
Ljiljana Krejić, BHT1. Gospodine Ešdaun, pretpostavljam da ste čuli ili bar vidjeli, po gradu su oblijepljeni plakati i bilbordi sa vašim...
Who could not have seen them?
Krajnje... Ok. Bravo ste. Koji su krajnje provokativni. Kako vi to komentarišete?
I think they're rather fun, actually. I think that this is a free society. People are allowed to express their views in any way they wish. And perhaps I can pass a message through my colleagues in the press to the young SDP. If they have a small version of this, will they be kind enough to send it to me so I can put it up in my office back in Britain when I get there? It's part of a free society, perfectly legitimate thing to do. Let me comment, however, on one thing, because I was very disturbed to see in the press that apparently the police had intervened in this. The story, I think, needs to be known. As I understand it, and I asked my colleagues to check up on this, if the police had intervened in an inappropriate way, that would be very, very improper. The free society, these young people have a right to put up posters of that sort if they wish to do so. It's very much part of an open society. I understand that what happened, for the record, is this, that a citizen apparently called the police, concerned about activity in the middle of the night, and concerned that this may have been illegal. Quite proper and good for the citizen to have done that. The police turned up on the citizen's request. They asked to see the, what's it called? No, it wasn't a Lich Carta. It's a legal agreement to put up posters. I've forgotten the name for it. What's it called? Whatever it is, there is a legal agreement. There's a license, forgive me, license to put up posters. They asked to see the license was shown, end of story. If there had been any pressure not to put this up, that would have been, because it might have been embarrassing to me or other people, that would have been highly inappropriate. So perhaps you'll pass my message on to the young SDP. Send us a small copy and I'll make sure it's stuck up in my office. I think it's good fun. Anything else?
Just one more, and briefly, as I said, for our TV people, the biggest and the second biggest failure, unfinished business, and on the other side, success of your mandate, what would it be?
Oh, I mean, there is no answer. There is no other answer to that than Karadzic and Mladic. You know, if someone said to me, what would you wish to have happened that hasn't happened in my mandate, it's the arrest of Karadzic and Mladic.
But that's not your mandate.
Well, it's not my mandate, but I'm involved in it, and I have been involved in it, because we changed the policy to catch Karadzic and Mladic. Up until now, when I came here, the policy was what I call the lucky break policy. Let's sit by and wait for a intercepted phone call, and then the archangel of justice in the form of an S-4 helicopter would swoop into a forest clearing and in a great dramatic moment carry Karadzic or Mladic off to The Hague. I never thought that would succeed. I thought what we needed was a campaign to do this. So I said to S-4, fine. In my view, the military swoop comes at the end, not the beginning. We now need to exercise political pressure. The removal of the famous 59, the closing of bank accounts, the shutting down of firms who were supplying Karadzic. Intense political pressure, both on politicians and on commercial assets who were funding the Karadzic network, which we've done. And then we needed to change public opinion. You know, arguably the most important thing we've done in this is the Srebrenica Commission. Tadic, the president of Serbia Montenegro, told me that nothing more changed the attitude of people in Serbia Montenegro that Mladic should be caught than the Srebrenica Commission. Of course, the Scorpions video added to that later. So we had to do three things. It wasn't just a military operation. That's not my mandate. But I've used my political power to support that, and I have used, and we have used the things like the Srebrenica Commission to change public opinion. And that means that we've done one good thing, even if we have failed to do one even bigger thing. The good thing is we've broken the dam of obstructionism from the Serb authorities. On the 1st of January last year, not a single war criminal had gone to The Hague by virtue of the Serb authorities, the Banja Luka Belgrade authorities. Now 11 of Karadzic's closest supporters are in The Hague, and that means his room for maneuver is narrowed, it means he's more isolated, and I'm very confident that the result of that, it's a matter of deep regret to me that they're not in The Hague already. But as a result of that policy, that change policy, I'm very clear that he will be in The Hague sooner than would otherwise have been the case. It's been a very long press conference. I hope that's... I think that's for others to judge. I mean, I can... Well, I mean, it's... The one that is, as I said the other day, the one that's given me most personal pressure. A high rep can do official things, then is allowed to do personal things. My two personal projects were Srebrenica, Potocari, and Bielorussia Igma. And I suppose the thing that's given me most personal pleasure is working with the Mothers of Srebrenica to do this. I think Srebrenica Commission is one of the things that, which I think has helped to move public opinion. And finally, I want to pay tribute to those who put into practice VAT. I mean, be in no doubt, that change that began the 1st of January will change and improve every life in this country. It will increase the amount of revenue that's raised. It will diminish the amount of tax evasion and corruption. It will create a single economic space. It will bring in investment. So in terms of the long-term effect on BIH citizens, I deeply regret that the reforms we've taken have not yet had an impact in the lives of ordinary people in Bosnia and Herzegovina. I know that. I go and stay with them from time to time. So I think that will have, and the rule of... I'll leave it there. Okay? Thanks very much.